WFM KFAI Minneapolis. I'm Al McFarland. Welcome to The Conversation with Al McFarland. I'm glad to be here and glad to have you along as well. This is going to be a great program. I've got some dear friends of mine, people I've known for a long time and some for shorter periods of time, but people that are committed to the health and well-being of our community and of humanity. One of the things that's on my mind right now is, has our government, have our institutions turned their back on critical, persistent, pressing issues? I'm talking particularly about HIV, AIDS, awareness, prevention, treatment. And so I asked some friends of mine to jump on this call with me to discuss things regarding policy and practice, both in the past, the advances we've made, but also what lies ahead, because there's a certain amount of antipathy towards progressive thinking communities from the current administration. At least that's my point of view. I'm interested in your point of view. If you have a comment, I want to join the conversation, we invite you to do that. If you're listening on the radio on KFAI and you get a chance to, you can pull over and jump online. We're streaming live to Facebook and to LinkedIn. We're streaming live to YouTube, the Insight News channel, and the Black Press USA channel. So we got you connected. We want to hear you, have your voice. Let me introduce my friends here, and I want to just bring them on screen and then have them introduce themselves, and I'll talk about them and my relationship with each of them as we go. Alvin King is here. He is a broadcaster, communicator like me, based out of Washington, D.C., has a show that I've been a guest on. The show is called He Said, He Said, He Said, and it airs here on Black Press USA and other places as well. We'll talk about that. Alvin, good to see you. How are you, brother?
Al, I'm doing great. Thank you for having me. It's good to be here with you. I feel like I'm in the house with a roommate. So thank you for having me here.
Well, we have a connection with the person that took this show to the next level, and that's a friend of mine who was a partner of yours. Vash Bodhi, who unfortunately transitioned. He's now an ancestor. We'll talk about him, and because I want you to say some things that reflect the beauty that he brought to all of our lives in his professional approach to communicating powerfully. Who's also here is a long-term friend and family friend, and that's Michael Cole. Michael Cole is an entrepreneur. He's in the beauty business, among other things, but he's a thought leader in the community and has been an outspoken leader, conversationalist, analyst, and we welcome his voice as well. Michael, I told someone before the show that I was telling Shia how we got this conversation started, that Bobby's my wife, and I were watching TV and saw this brother. I said, "That's Michael Cole." She said, "No." I said, "That looked like him exactly." Well, it was a brother who's a judge in Mississippi. And I took a screenshot of the picture and sent it to Michael. So, Michael, I thought this was you. He said, "Well, it could have been me a few years ago."
But yeah.
You guys look like twins, say some years apart. But it was a good feeling to see him. And it just brought you to mind, Michael. And it's good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome.
Yeah. Shai Ellis is here. Charnita, but we know her as Shai or Mama Shai. Shai, how you doing? I got your camera. I see your lights in your building, but don't see you. I think you're around somewhere. Also, we're joined by William Greer. Will Greer, Will, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Good to be here.
Good, good. Well, let me start just by setting the stage. You know, I have a general interest in advancing a conversation about our community, how we show up in community in the world. And when I say my goal and my desire is that we have justice and freedom for all, that we have opportunity for all, that we have advancement for all, peace for all, I mean just that. And too often we draw barriers, we draw lines and boundaries, and we say all is just my subset. And I'm not talking about that. I'm engaging you, brothers and sister, around the question of what all means in the Black community. Why is it important? One of the things that each of you has done has been an advocate for equality, for transparency and for freedom, particularly addressing the question of GLBTQ issues in our community. Let me start with that. So, Alvin, first of all, welcome again. Introduce your program, yourself, and your vision and mission with He Said, He Said, He Said.
Again, thank you, Al, for having me here. Well, He Said, He Said, He Said Live is a weekly show, a national talk show, as Al has said, on NNPA streaming, along with my co-hosts, Bobby and Sean. We bring authentic conversations from the perspective of three seasoned, openly Black, gay, unapologetic, intelligent, witty Black men. And we explore today's biggest headlines, culture, health, entertainment, public affairs, and Black excellence. And Al, what I think sets our show apart is our commitment to telling stories that are community-driven, they're relevant, they're rooted in real life, and we go beyond the headlines to examine how the issues shaping our nations directly affect our communities, our families, and our lived experiences. We also believe that most meaningful conversations happen when diverse voices are welcome, respected, and heard. Our audience isn't just watching our show. They show up, they participate in conversations. And through those conversations and dialogue and interactive engagement, we encourage people to ask questions, challenge perspectives, and share experiences that deepen our collective understanding. And I want to end by saying we do have a common goal. And we want to inform, we want to inspire, we want to amplify unrepresented voices and create conversations that matter, Al, because every story has an impact and every perspective adds to the conversation. So that's who He Said, He Said, He Said Live is all about.
And it's a great program. Talk about Vash Bodhi. Vash was a person that engineered and got me connected to actually Black Press USA as the engineer for this program, The Conversation with Al McFarland, a brilliant, visionary communicator. Tell us about Vash.
Vash, first of all, helped conceive He Said, He Said, He Said Live. In all the years that I knew Vash and working together with him, we only met one time in person. Mm-hmm. I was seeking people to possibly come on and have chemistry with me. And I met him on the internet. He literally went into the dirt and created everything that He Said, He Said, He Said Live is. And from a technical perspective, the things that I know now, I only know because of Vash. And on a personal level, he opened up to me to share some of his struggles that he was having. And unfortunately, one of his main struggles, and I just get choked up, I couldn't connect with him in the way that he would allow me to, and he took his own life. Mm-hmm. And so that, I believe people come into your life for a reason. Mm-hmm. And I think Vash's reason for coming into my life was helping me to fulfill something that I didn't even know that I had inside of me. And he was that person. He elevated everything he did and touched. And I miss him every single day. And nothing I do with this show will not ever have any reflection or memory mm-hmm. lost about Vash Bodhi.
Yeah. And I say that I operate with the sense, Alvin, that he's still with us. Yeah. And that he never really leaves. He's here because his imprint is on our work, our vision, mm-hmm. and on the spirit that we operate from. Michael Cole, brother, good to see you. Take a minute to talk about your career as a business leader and as a thought leader in Twin Cities. Thank you so much for being in this conversation. You and I have said that this is something we should do not just one time, but set up as an ongoing way to engage. What do you think?
Well, I said that based on the fact that it's so much information out there that to try to get it all out there in 1 hour is almost next to impossible. Especially when you start sharing your stories, mm-hmm. you know, that's going to impact the community and help people understand exactly what we're living with nowadays, you know. That's why I said what I said. But I mean, it's an honor to be a part of this today, just being, you know, in the past, I helped spearhead the marriage referendum, the fight for equality in the LGBTQ community, you know, being one of the highly respected leaders in the LGBT community, you know, it's just important that I be a part of whatever we're trying to bring forth to help our people, especially at a time like this. You know, a lot of them don't understand exactly what's going on when it comes down to, you know, the government with the, as far as with as the medication, what exactly what they have available to them. A lot of people just out here winging it. So just to be a voice or a face that they can, you know, kind of like pin with what we're trying to bring to them, you know, that's an honor within itself. You know, being of the age that I am brings about another, you know, demographic as far as what we live in within the LGBTQ community, you know, so I have a voice for that, you know, and so it's like, you know, whatever I can bring forth or add to, you know, I'm going to do that. I've been given several platforms to be a voice in the community, you know, as far as with the fashions, as far as being one of the leading hairstylists in the community. I've been doing this for 44 years, which is, 44 years. So, you know, I've been able to reach a lot of people. And the biggest thing I can say is the respect that I get in the LGBTQ community. So that alone, you know, if I was to speak up and say something, they would probably listen because they respect me like that, you know? And that right there is an honor within itself, you know? So that's basically it.
Well, let's start with that. Let's bring in one more voice here, and then I'll bring in William Greer. Bring in Shai Ellis. Shai is a warrior, leader, queen in our community. A voice that is uncompromising, that is fearless, that is fierce, and like you, Michael. When she speaks, everybody listens. Everybody yes. pays attention. She delivers results. Shai, sister, good to see you.
It's good to be seen, I tell you. Thank you, I am honored.
She's a lot like Al, she's technically challenged.
I am totally, you see,
I turn your volume up.
Okay, well, let me see, where's my volume? Here we go, right here, is this it right here?
Did you, you have to hit for your audio.
Okay. Well,
for your microphone to be on.
Yes.
On your, you got your video. On. You need your microphone on also.
I'm hearing her on my side, Michael.
I can hear her.
Yeah.
Okay, so Michael, how about
okay,
you?
Okay, we're going, Shai.
Put your audio together. Love. Anyway, so on that note, I love him and he knows it. That is my dude. Usually my hair would be flowing and falling and everything because he keeps it like that. But the humidity and everything has had me get to go to the bun. But let me say this. I am honored to have been asked to participate in this. Okay. I am Shai Ellis, also community known as Mama Shai. And I have been the director of the Check Yourself Health and Wellness Center. That is a program that started out at the City Inc. and eventually moved to High School for Recording Arts. And I'm the director. I say the director, but I'm really being directed by the most fabulous community and young people, the Check Yourself crew. And the program was written and designed for me to reach and approach and listen to and teach African-American young people that had a gang and street culture background. And so as my girlfriend, may she rest in peace, Carol Fitzgerald, used to tell me, she said, girl, you have always going to have me backing you, because she said, nobody wants to deal with the onion kids. And I used to say, Carol, why you call my kids the onion kids? I said, do they got BO or something? I thought maybe one day she had smelled them or something. She said, no, honey, because those kids are strong and they'll make you cry.
Hmm.
So I have always, and they are, though these young people are strong, and I have been blessed to be directed by them. So I need to say that. Shout mm-hmm. out to all Check Yourself crew members and community members that have supported the Check Yourself Health and Wellness Center and the Check Yourself crew. And I can honestly say that William and Michael have been those people that have dealt with me and all my little onion kids that I just love and adore. And I come marching in the meeting and everything. And they used to say, why does she always bring those kids with her? Because they need to know. They are making decisions yes. about your life, yes. mm-hmm. who yes. you are. And our focus was HIV and AIDS and STD prevention and awareness. Mm-hmm. And I was like, who better to talk to than the people you're saying? They're constantly were saying they were at the top of the numbers mm-hmm. and they were the problem, but nobody was asking them to the table when decisions were being made and discussions were taking place. So as Mama Shy, the community mother, that was my job to make sure that they were at the table and that they were a part of the discussion, because how are you going to talk about a solution and not bring what you say the problem is to the table? That part. Yeah. So we, you know, that is something that happens and has taken place. The program was funded in 1992, February of 1992. And it's just, my funding was just terminated. Guess what? I'm on the last day, of course, Juneteenth. June 19th was my last working day, but that's them taking their funding. You can't take a ministry. You can't take mm-hmm. what God gives me. Mm-hmm. And more funding will come, and I mm-hmm. will be able to do whatever I need to do to continue as Mama Shy. But hopefully I have raised up some young ones underneath that can move forward with this, because I'd be lying if I said I'm not tired and exhausted and looking at retirement and all of those things. But at the same time, you know, God never gives you anything. He doesn't give you something and not equip you. Mm-hmm. So I am equipped. So they need to watch out for the next generation or the next situation that's coming, because I'll be right there holding their backs up, giving them every bit of information, wisdom, and everything that we possibly can. So I'm just honored. I'm a part of the heterosexual community, but I am GBLT, and the kids tell me I'm saying it wrong now. You know, we got all these other initials and question marks and everything, but I'm old school. I've been at this, like I said, since 1992. So y'all just work with me, okay? Shy. I love you, and I'm honored to be here.
Thank you. Shy, thank you so much. I'm Al McFarland. This is The Conversation with Al McFarland. And I want to bring in now William Greer. And William, this has been a great way to set you up, because you're working with the numbers, and you're working with young people out of the university. First of all, welcome and thank you. Tell what you do, where you do, and then lay out how we should proceed to have this discussion among us.
Oh, okay. so hello, everyone. It's so nice Al. To see.
Yeah, go ahead.
It has to be something technically on your end. I can't hear neither one of them.
Okay. We hear each other, and we're okay on the radio. So
why don't you?
Yeah, you sign out, Michael, and come back in.
Okay.
Are your AirPods charged?
Yeah. Go ahead, William.
Can't hear you.
Great. So my name is William Greer, born and reared in Minnesota. I have been working in the HIV industry space since about 98. Currently, I am with the Youth and AIDS Projects at the University of Minnesota. They've been core to my career experience. This is my third time back at the organization. I've done everything from outreach, peer educator, frontline testing, program coordination, currently in the role of medical case manager. In addition to working here, I've done work with Hennepin County, both at Red Door Clinic as well as North Point Health and Wellness. I've also spent some time in pharmaceuticals on the HIV side of things, so really kind of getting the picture from multiple lenses and multiple points on the spectrum as it relates to HIV and AIDS. So yeah, I've been doing this community work kind of for a while. I I will never claim myself to be an expert in anything other than my own lived experience. Mm-hmm. And even then, the information's kind of iffy, depending on what I remember. So, but I think this is, you know, a very important conversation to have. It's important. It's in a conversation that needs to continue to be had. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, there's looking at kind of the life cycle of HIV thus far. There was a time when it was hot, it was sexy, it was the thing, it was, you know, headlining often. Once treatments got better, once things started to sort of blend into the overall community, that's when things got quiet, but it didn't go away. The conversation went away, but not HIV or the issues around it. So, you know, thinking about my experience growing up as a young queer person in Minnesota, I think the lens that I often like to take, or the place I like to stand in these conversations, is being the person that I didn't have. And so I think when we think about these kind of experiences, these kind of conversations, you know, being born to growing up in a single parent household, I have a sibling, you know, heterosexual. So when it came to William and how William walks in the world, mom was kind of clueless, and not that she didn't want to know. It's just, who do you go to talk about how to raise a gay Black kid? Especially when that's not your lived experience. And so, you know, my approach to the work is to be the person in the room that you can ask the question to be the person in the room that you can say, oh, there's somebody here who looks like me, or, oh, there's a safe place to have that conversation. I'm always happy to share that with whoever's willing to listen. So it's just an honor to be here.
What is the conversation we need to be having right now in our community? What are the trends that we should be alarmed about? What are the expectations we should continue to clarify, identify, and insist upon? What do you think, William?
That's a really good and big question. I'd be curious what other people have to offer. I'll say from off the top, though, to answer that, I think the most important thing is to continue having it be a part of the conversation. Given my work specifically, when we're talking specifically around HIV, mm-hmm. It's one of those things where, again, kind of world according to William, when HIV came on the scene, it was a very specialized, it was a very niche sort of medical condition, right? And we still see this today in medical practices where folks may be interested in PrEP, folks might be inquiring for friends, and primary healthcare providers will be like, oh, I don't do HIV. It's like, okay, but that doesn't mean you don't have to know about it. That doesn't mean you don't get to advocate for it. Mm-hmm. So I would say, for, you know, from my lens at this point, the important conversation is to continue having the conversation and continue advocating for it like we do any other health condition, long-term health condition, right? Like we have diabetes awareness within communities and Black churches. We do cancer screenings for men, women, and everything in between. But when was the last time, you know, a church group had a HIV testing day? When was the last time you heard somebody talk about spiritual and sexual health from the pulpit? When was the last time, you know, you're hanging out with grandma snapping peas and she's like, baby, when's the last time you got tested for chlamydia? Mm-hmm. Right? Like those kind of conversations where we learn, like that to me is one of the important pillars that we need to move forward, especially when we're not getting that information from sort of those larger health organizations that are supposed to be keeping us safe and healthy, particularly in this climate. So that's what I'll start with. And
That's a great beginning. Alvin, jump in.
Thank you, William. Yeah, you opened the door. A couple of things. Michael, congratulations on 44 years. I just celebrated 45 years in the fashion industry. So nice to meet you. Shy, nice to meet you. Thank you. I'm sure because of Al, it's like GE, we're connected. And I'm going to follow back up with you because you got a story and I want to hear about it and share it. I grew up when HIV AIDS. When AIDS started, I grew up in 89 when AIDS started. That was probably one of the worst times in your life, because if you had friends, you could see them on Tuesday and by Friday they were dead. And if you were Black, you probably would be dead by Thursday. So what do we have to worry about right now? It is everything that this administration is doing to take away from not only Black people, but let me hone in on the LGBTQIA plus community, from marriage equality to trying to destroy decades of advancement in HIV and AIDS that they're trying to strip away, that's helping people live longer. They are actually messing with our lives in a way that for me to talk about it, I just get so angry. I can't say what I really want to say publicly. You know what I'm saying? But we need to be concerned about everything. And William is right. We cannot stop talking, because this is not going to last forever. Because the moment we stop talking about what we need and what we want and how we feel, then that they're going to kind of push it away. But this cannot last forever. And this RFK Jr. person, that's what we need to be concerned about. Right now, he is the demon. He is a demon in our lives when it comes to health and our well-being. And so I'm going to leave it right there and give the stage to somebody else.
Michael, jump in.
We need to be concerned. Off the backs of what he was just talking about, I came up in the 80s. Well, I mean, 60s, 70s, 80s. And when AIDS came on the scene, it rocked the whole gay community to the point where the amount of fear that we lived in was unreal. It was unprecedented, because the thing about it is they had no answers for us. And like he said, you'd find out that one of your friends, you know, was dealing with it, and the next week they were gone. You know, they didn't know if it was in a saliva. They didn't know if it was in our tears. They didn't know if it was in the blood. They didn't know if it was on the riding on the surface of the skin. They had nothing. So we were at a point where, you know, interactions was almost, I mean, people was literally taking shots in the dark just to be intimate with people, because you just did not know, you know? So, yeah, if these people nowadays could understand the fear that we were under back then, they would be more guarded with their bodies and how they go about protecting themselves, because that fear is unmatched at this point. It's like COVID, but a little bit more intense, because mm-hmm. it was almost targeted when it came down to the LGBTQ community, you know? Mm-hmm. So the fear that surrounds HIV, and the problem with it is everything has gotten better. Medications are better. Mm-hmm. Health is better, mm-hmm. you know, but there's still that fear that people have of contracting. But that's because they don't know about the protection methods. And that's why we have to get it out there about people learning to be more proactive in protecting themselves. One thing that I did coming up, once this thing hit and was going like wildfire, I had to address everybody as if they were positive, and make sure that anybody I interacted with, that I used as many methods of protection as I possibly could. So looking at it from that way, you kind of like really, really protect yourself, you know? And but nowadays this is a sex driven era where everybody is like a free for all. And I think protection, you know, is just something that they're not investing in, you know? They just not. They don't care, you know, because for one, the medications have improved to the point where you can live a whole life with HIV and never come down with any of the symptoms. You can be okay because of the medications. But see, what they don't know is your medication is at risk. Right. With this government, everything is at risk. Nothing is, you know, the our government that we have now, they're taking away everything. And anything that he doesn't agree with or like, especially when it comes down to the African-American community, he's taken away. Mm-hmm. He's stripping us of everything. And this is just on his bucket list. I know it is. You cannot tell me it's not.
Well, William said something that was really important. You brought up there are other diseases that are associated with living. And he said chlamydia, syphilis, and whatnot. I don't care. You know, I think this generation after AIDS or HIV that we're living in, because we have PrEP and because we have, you know, a different drug to help us live longer, they do not protect you from getting those other diseases that can kill you. And that is the education that we need to have, like, right now. Because a lot of people who went through the AIDS and HIV crisis, if anybody's dying from AIDS right now, it's because of denial. You decided not to help yourself. Because that is what I've seen in 67 years right now that's happening in under AIDS and HIV. But the other diseases where you're not, you know, you thinking that you can't get them or that you're invincible, those are the diseases that are killing. But as Michael said, any type of resources that can protect us is now being stripped away from even in those areas. And so how do you deal with that? You can't just stop having sex.
And may I chime in? Mama Shy, do you want to say
something? Oh, I can't wait. I just can't wait. Okay, first of all, let me say this to you. I asked some questions. I printed this out today, and I just would like to read this. The Trump administration 2027 budget is the latest escalation in a sustained campaign against LGBTQ+ people. Mm-hmm. As proposed, it would cause real measurable harm across numerous critical government services, health, and protections. Mm-hmm. The LGBTQ voters will represent more than 10% of the voting population, and these deliberate attacks of the program services that support GBLTQ Americans will not be forgotten in November. But let mm-hmm. me say this to you. Mm-hmm. Get out there before November. Mm-hmm. We got to get these seats back. And I don't even want to hear the drama that, because a lot of us will say, oh, I don't believe in voting. No, it don't do nothing. This, that, and the other. And, oh, and I'm independent. And I'm just, your ass better check Democrat. Because we need those seats. I don't care if you agree or disagree. We need to be realistic about what is going on and taking place in this country. And we can come back and check you later about what you promised that you're not keeping. And we're going to hold you accountable. But right now, you better check mark. And guess what? Minnesota, because I know I'm talking to other places and I don't know what your systems are. But go and vote early. Yeah. Mm. No, you can't stand the lines and you're going to be overwhelmed with all the people and everything. Go and vote early. I wish I had my thing in front of me because I can't remember nothing by heart, but check and find out. You can go and place your votes now. Let's not wait until November for a mm-hmm. presidential vote. Let's mm-hmm. grab the seats and all the positions that we need now to support and back the president of our choice. This is happening. There's so much that was talked about health services, trans-sensitive behavioral health services and prevention navigation for transgender and gender non-conforming individuals targeted for elimination. You understand? Mm-hmm. Okay. We're making all these fusses and stuff about things because they want to keep us in an uproar about stuff that don't even matter. Okay. Right. Pay attention. Talk mm-hmm. to your family members. Talk to the young people. Because I'm gonna tell you what, like my young people say, well, I don't know, you know how you're not supposed to tell people how to vote or anything. And I said, well, okay, I'm not gonna tell you how to vote. But since she's your love and your respect and everything that you say that you have for me, this is who Mama Shy is voting for. Right. I have to do it like that, however I need to do it, and because of it's necessary to get them to jump in. They don't understand sometimes right now in their early ages about how these decisions and things affect them. So it's up to us as adults in their life to explain to them how severe and how critical this is and why they have to participate. Like, but okay, to go back, that was that spiel I just went on. To go back, education. You said something, Alvin. People today, if they don't know, especially in our age group, because I would say anybody in Minnesota will tell you, honey, I was a beast when it came to outreach and education. Okay? That's what I did with young people. And so what happened was when COVID came, the money kind of shifted, you know, in terms of what they were putting behind the education of prevention of HIV and AIDS. And then you see when we came back, the numbers are up again because we weren't putting in the work that had been previously put in because of the funding. But we got to realize we can't attach the education of our children and our community to funding, their funding. We got to do what we got to do anyway. And that means if we getting out on the corner for with a sign that says I'm going to have a free class, because I'm going to start doing some stuff. Class, come in. Because one of the things I promise you when I finish with you, you'll know what HIV is. You'll know what AIDS is. You'll know how you become infected, you'll know how you don't become infected, and you will know about prevention. And if those things are covered, we have covered a multitude of whatever people want to say. I was going to say a multitude of sin. But anyway, because HIV does not discriminate. It does not care who you're,
not at all.
Who you're having sex with and what form you're having it in. What it's all about is if you come in contact with an infected person. And see, those are the things we need to teach because we need to make sure that our community is aware of you're not going to become HIV from sitting next to somebody, from holding somebody's hand, from having a family member. There are things that we as a people don't need to teach now again going forward that we taught back then, like you were saying. People know we taught that. I taught that. My program existed from February of 1992. I got young people that were a part of my program that are grandparents now. So it's like we need to embrace and bring our village back and start teaching again, because this generation that's coming up, William, and I know you're where you are, a lot of them don't know and don't have the information. So we got to start educating again. We got to start getting out. We got to be passing out condoms. We got to teach them the difference between latex and natural. We got to let them know that HIV and AIDS are two different things, that AIDS is a result of HIV. That you don't just get HIV, you become infected with AIDS, you become infected with HIV first. And just all of those things that are educational, we got to start talking about. And yeah, we got to try to hold the government accountable and we need money to do things. But guess what? For those of us that know and that have the education and everything that we have, we got to get out and do it ourselves. I can't depend on Trump and his government and none of that to do it. But one of the ways we can make sure that some of the right things happen, vote.
Get rid of Trump. Get rid of Trump and his cronies. I'm Al McFarland. This is The Conversation with Al McFarland. My guest, Alvin King, is joining us from Washington, D.C. He's the host, producer of He Said Live. It's a podcast, weekly national program on Black Press USA. William Greer is here. He's active with young people, education, and awareness. Michael Cole, entrepreneur, a businessman, and you just heard Shai Ellis. We'd love to have your voice in this conversation as well. Thanks, shout out to Batala for the heart she gave us, and thanks also to Thomas Mayo for the like. If you like this program, say so. Let us know. Drop a note in the comments. You have a question, a comment, an objection. You know, we want to hear from you. And so if you're online on any of the platforms, drop your comment in the comment section. You can also join the program. We're going to put the QR code up on top of the screen, and you can get into the waiting room, and we can bring you in for a question or comment to engage with one of our guests today. This is The Conversation with Al McFarland. And again, we're glad to have you here right now. You know, I want to throw some stuff in this a little bit and take this to another level. As a communicator, as a broadcaster, as a journalist, I remember when HIV AIDS first showed up, I believe, what was it, 80s, Michael? When, what,
was it, like 82, 82.
It was 82.
Mm-hmm. So
82.
I worked with and helped create a group called, first of all, Insight News went to the Minnesota Department of Health, because I'm watching the news and watching the story and the fear that's emerging globally. And the notion behind HIV AIDS transmission at that time, from my point of view as a communicator, was that this is one more time they were pointing the finger at Black people. They were laying potential cataclysmic, you know, emergence of HIV AIDS at the doorstep of our people. And basically, either saying it directly or indirectly, they were blaming African people, Black people, for the creation, the invention, and the spread of AIDS. Mm-hmm. And so massive, in my mind, willful disinformation about HIV AIDS, so much so that they helped create the stigma that made people hide and not come out and try to get the help they need. But they also let a lot of people think, oh, that's just them. And they cultivated that, what I say is insidiousness, where some of them might have thought maybe AIDS would take them out. Maybe it'll get rid of them. And we ain't got to worry about them, the them being us, our people. But then they discovered that, as you said, Shai, AIDS doesn't discriminate. And the epidemic, pandemic, was global and attacked white people as well. Then the story changed. So two things had to happen. We had to tell them, number one, don't blame us. That's number one. Patient zero is not an African person, from my understanding. And number two, if the problem exists, then we deserve every resource available in science, in health, in practice, and bring the money to the problem. Because, and that started to happen when it became a white problem. Mm-hmm. And so the question now is, if the medicine has advanced to where the imminent threat isn't there, but the threat still exists where there is lack of information or ignorance, does that put our community at a disadvantage? That's a long roundabout question, but we'll help me out. Jump in. What am I saying, and how's it coming across?
So I think I want to say the short answer to that question is yes. There's a couple of things that I got out of that. So one, this has been an awesome conversation. So I have a lot of squirrels, like, just really happy inside my head right now. A couple of things to bring up. One, kind of going back to the previous conversation, the face of HIV looked a lot different in 1980s than it did in the 1990s, than it did in the 2000s, than it does now, right? And so I think when we talk about community, when we talk about education, when we talk about awareness, we have to remember, and I challenge myself to remember this as well, like, I don't know what it's like growing up in community where half of my cohort dies because of an illness. That was never my experience. I did know to grow up having sex with the Grim Reaper in the corner of the room at all times because I exist in my body. But I don't know what it's like to lose all my friends. My nephew, for example, he will now know what it's like to come of sexual age in a world where there is PrEP, right? In a world where you can prevent HIV with something outside of condoms and prayers. And so his developmental journey, his opinion, his view, his urgency around sexual health, HIV, health in general, is going to look a lot different. Mm-hmm. And so I think as we have these conversations and we look at engaging communities, I know that I can't engage my nephew from my perspective because that's not his lived experience. Mm-hmm. So I think, one, we have to bring that into the conversation. Mm-hmm. The other thing you mentioned earlier, thinking about like kind of how things fell out and who caught the blame and who caught the virus, right? So I think part of that also has to do with like the who and the how we set things up. Mm-hmm. They use an analogy a friend of mine gave me, like everybody knows that the lion is the king of the what?
Jungle.
Lion is the king of the jungle. Where do lions actually live?
In the jungle.
Ain't they a lion in the jungle? They live in the prairie. So, right, see? So that thing, that part. And so when we think about HIV, like Mama Shy said, HIV does not discriminate, point blank, period. If we want to deal with HIV, we have to get past that part. We have to get past the who. But when we think about HIV, when we think about both today and yesteryear, when we think about who's having these conversations, when we think about who the advertisements are targeting, when we think about what populations are being discussed as in the global conversation, right? That paints a very king of the jungle picture of this particular thing that doesn't necessarily live there. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So as we think about HIV, as we think about, you know, how do we work with this? One, we have to step back and kind of realize where it actually lives versus where we think it lives. Because again, even being in the industry, I have heterosexual friends that I've never had a conversation with HIV about, ever. Mm-hmm. Because even though I do the work in my own bias, I need to watch out for the little queer kids out here doing XYZ, not the heterosexual ones, because they don't really get HIV, but I'm in the work and I know the thing, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think part of it is adjusting whatever that mechanism may be as far as what I think versus what I see. The other thing I think that's really important is paying attention to the little things. And this was something brought up earlier. When we think about how the government is currently chipping away at the rights, mm-hmm. and you know, comment was brought up earlier, thinking about HIV is more than just the virus, right? There's the whole things that, so getting the medication, getting to the doctor, getting to the pharmacy, those sorts of social structures. If I don't know where my food is coming from, I'm not thinking about taking a pill. Mm-hmm. If I've been couch hopping for the last 3 years, I'm not thinking about going to the doctor. And so it's those little things, it's the things outside of the actual virus that I think have the most impact. And, you know, I was sharing with folks earlier, I did work in rural Georgia for a number of years. And transportation, it was like transportation and housing were the two biggest things. If I could get to the clinic, I'll be there. I'll take my medication. I can't get there. And I'm not about to ask my cousin to bring me to the infectious disease doctor. Mm-hmm. And then you pile on the stigma on top of that, like everybody knows
exactly.
That AIDS clinic. And it's right. So it kind of snowballs. But when we think about how to protect ourselves, we need to protect the little things. Because once they take away transportation resource, you ain't going nowhere. Once they take away food resource, if there's a food requirement for your medication, your treatment just got a lot more complicated. If they start consolidating things so that the clinic is no longer, you know, 15 minutes away from my house, now it's an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. That's going to impact what I do and how I engage in the system. And so I think as we keep an eye on things, we also have to pay attention to the little things. Because again, as they chip away at the rights, like as they chip away at things like abortion, as they chip away at things like women's rights, like it's a domino effect. And once you get one thing away, it's easy to take the rest away.
Alvin, jump in. How's it look to you?
Well, no, going back to something Shai said about how she, you know, educates her students. I'm calling them, can I call them your students, Shai?
Yeah,
her students. You know, I look at parenting. I'm not a parent, but I think in this day and age, if parents told their kids and had the some of these kids don't have parents that will do that, but if kids you can learn a lot about a person if you ask them a question. And if a kid was to say to somebody, do you have HIV? And the way that person will respond to that kid, whether they lie or not, the kid is going to know. The kid is going to know that there's something up and maybe I shouldn't go down this road. My point that I'm trying to make here is that education has to start at the lowest level possible. I'm dealing right now with a nephew who loved their parents to death, but you didn't talk to that kid. Mm-hmm. You didn't talk to that kid. And some of the things that's playing out with him right now, you didn't go to grassroots and say, did you do this? Did you ask that? But now that they're in the 15 years old and making all these freaking mistakes, you have to take responsibility for not going total grassroots. You got to start at the beginning. And some of these kids that are now getting HIV, which I just can't understand, like, what is going on, it's because they weren't talked to ask some questions, and get a feel for the road that you're about to travel on because you just didn't ask the question.
Michael, would people kind of rather not know now? Why are we losing traction in your, work with, hundreds of people in the community in your beauty business? Is it a conversation that we are not having?
We're not having it.
And is that lack of conversation intentional?
It's fear.
Talk about it.
It's fear. Mm-hmm. The conversation has not been had because it's just fear based around it. Because when people hear HIV, AIDS, all they think of is death. Okay? It's just like when I got cancer. So many people, I lost so many family members and friends because they all assume I was dying. And they couldn't bear the thought of watching me die. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was thinking of something when Alvin was talking. When I was in high school, we was just having a free-for-all. This is the 70s, okay? Mm-hmm. And so we had a place called the Red Door. And I'm telling you, we would say, hey, what you doing today for lunch? Oh, I'm going to the Red Door, get a shot, y'all. I think, da-da-da-da-da-da. And that's how we were. We were just free like that. And so if you came to school and you seen somebody sitting on one hip, you knew they had went to the Red Door and got a shot. But we were free like that. Because everything that we, like, child, come, hey, where you going today? I'm cutting lunch. I got to go to the Red Door. But that was when we were only dealing with not even herpes at the time, syphilis, just with gonorrhea and syphilis.
Gonorrhea, right.
And we would get this shot and we'd be good to go. Then 82 came around and all hell breaks loose. And so it was just too hard to talk about. And Al said something about, he said, Alvin said something earlier about, you just cannot just stop having sex. Oh, yes, you can. I'm living proof of that. Let's don't get this twisted, okay? Living with HIV, being an older man living with HIV, mm-hmm. it's like it's hard to even be part of that community because I feel like I've aged out. Then once you've aged out and then you're dealing with this other entity, it's really hard to integrate yourself into the community. So to sit down and have a talk with people about HIV and AIDS, they don't want to hear it. But what I can say, because we're running out of time, is that the one thing you need to do and what saved me was early detection. Early detection saved my life. If it wasn't for that, I would have probably, when I found out, been in full-blown AIDS, But by me being tested as much. I got tested so much. My doctor referred me over to a psychiatrist. I said, but I'm afraid of this. Yes. And then here it is, finally get a test and it comes back positive. Mm-hmm. So it's like, how do you live with this? How do you live with this, Mm-hmm. And so, it's just like, now it's just like feeling like I've aged out of just life, period, especially with the LGBT community, with all our things we have, no films, no fats, no old, no this and that. Mm-hmm. It's just like you don't have a chance in this community. Mm-hmm. But when it comes down to HIV and AIDS, the fear is still there. Mm-hmm. Even though they out here acting and doing all willy-nilly, the fear is still there. Okay. But if I can tell anybody anything, get tested. Mm-hmm. Get tested as often as you can. If it's an every 6 month thing, but like William said, transportation, money, things of that nature. And then it's the whole fear of being, getting that test back and it being positive. What do you do with your life then? Some of them feel like your life is over. I'm here to tell you, life does not end with a positive test. It does not end with a positive test. Believe it or not, for some people, it's the start of life.
The more you know, that's right.
It's the start of life.
Well, and that's what you are.
I have to say something on this.
Go ahead.
I get what.